Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
Thank you, and hello, everyone. Welcome in. This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Don Allen, Tom Brown, Bruce Brown, Glenn Quibido, eventually Bobby Ardwin, and our special guest this evening. Help him out over there, Glenn.
Oh. Plug him in.
I think it's this one right here. Can you hear?
All right.
You can hear?
I hear a nice buzz.
Okay.
There you go. Got it.
Speak into the microphone.
Got it.
To go. Phil Deavy, who used to pitch for the Cajuns and pitched for Tony Robichaud in the late 90s, was drafted in 1999 in the fifth round by the Los Angeles Dodgers, and today is working as a real estate agent and entrepreneur, owns at least a piece of one restaurant, and we didn't get much further than that, did we?
Well, it's a big list, and so try to stay as busy as I can.
What was your first reaction when you heard that Robe had passed?
Shock and disbelief. It just, for someone of his stature in my life, is indestructible, and You'd never think in a million years that something like that would happen, especially at his age. So it was denial, shock, it really hasn't. It sunk in a little bit more, but it hasn't. You know,
it's going to be a while, I think, for everybody.
And it should, because of what he meant to not just me, but so many people. I'm not the only one, and all. The cycle. Everyone's had someone of incredible significance in their life pass away, and everyone's had to deal with it. And it's like I've said before, it'll be an attempt to find a new normal in my life, without him.
How did you first meet Tony?
One of the luckiest things that's ever happened to me, besides, meeting my wife. It's
good that you,
good you threw that in there. Yeah.
She might be listening. I guess the chain of events is my mother's a French teacher in Quebec, came here for a teacher's conference at the time. I wanted to play baseball in Division I baseball. I wanted to play in the United States somewhere. So I'm from Canada, a small town outside of Montreal. And my mom...
You don't pronounce your O's like you're from Canada.
I've heard various... I've been in Montreal having breakfast, and one time a waiter asked me if I was from Texas, and I about got off the table and punched him. And I've got friends here all the time that give me grief that say, you don't know how to say out, you say house funny. I'll talk to someone that I've never met before, and they'll say, hey, where are you from? So I guess I don't belong anywhere.
Sound like you belong here.
You're
well, it's been over 20 years, but I guess it's starting to sink in a little bit.
I think it's sinking in a lot.
Yeah.
I interrupted your story.
Well, you would know because you knew me in 97 when I came here. So if I sound different now than I did then, and then the Cajun is starting to make its way through the DNA.
I didn't pay that much attention to the accent then. Paid attention to the left arm.
Well, the left arm got me here. But, the story of meeting Coach Robe, which was my mom made it a point to meet the baseball coach. She met someone at the teacher's conference, and my mom mentioned, I got a son that wants to play baseball in college, and then the lady said, well, I just happen to know Coach Robichaud. I'm from Crowley. He's from Crowley. Let's go to the baseball field and let's see if we can make an introduction. So they went, and she met Coach Robe and said, I have a son who's a pitcher, who wants to play in college. And so he gave her his business card, And when she got home, I literally called him every day for 2 weeks and just kept bugging him. And he'd talk to me about the ice skaters, and I'd pick his brain about pitching. And finally, he just got tired of hearing from me, and he said, look, if you can find your way down here, then we'll have tryouts, and we'll let you come and try out. So I'm sure he was extremely disappointed when he met me. He was probably hoping to see someone a little bit more imposing.
Well, your physical stature is so small. Let's face it, you're on the small side.
Well,
or a Division I player.
I it worked in my favor, I think, on the mound. But most people that maybe have heard of me or know my name, it's funny because I always say my first impressions of people is always disappointment. I remember one time we did a summer camp. It was after I got drafted, and coach asked me to go talk to the kids at the summer camp. So I did, and I introduced myself. I said, I'm Phil Devey, blah, blah, blah. And this little kid sitting in the front, he must have been 10 or 11, he out loud, he said, you're not Phil Devey. And I said, what do you mean? I said, yes. He's like, no, you're not. Phil Devey is way bigger than you. I'm like, no, let me show you my ID. It's really me, guys.
Ken Myers told me not to call you Bill Devey. It must be an inside joke. Where does that come from?
I have no idea, actually. None whatsoever.
Oh, thank you, Ken.
So I guess he
set you up.
Yeah, he's on the inside on that one by himself.
What's your fondest memory of Rove?
Oh, man. I mean, there's I got plenty that funny and serious.
Tell something you hadn't told out in public yet. That's what we want. We don't want you to tell anybody else.
I'll tell you one. I did actually put it out. I've got a Facebook page, but I don't use it often. In the last 5 days, I've never been on social media more than I have in my entire life. Just because I've really enjoyed hearing the comments from people and watching videos and everything else. And so I made a post, and it was 2 days after Coach Rove passed. I was at home. I just couldn't focus, and I just felt like I needed to go to the ballpark. And I went over there, and, of course, it was locked up, couldn't get in. And nothing was stopping me from getting in. I was determined, so I scaled the wall. One of the wrought iron fences. I may have pulled two hamstrings doing it, and I just sat in the stands for 3 hours. And
Come on. Just
thinking back to, all the different things that Coach Rove's done for me, and it was real emotional. But it was, it was a just good time for me to reflect. And I sat there and I was looking at the scoreboard, and on the scoreboard, and I mean, you guys might remember this, the Cajun clock that's up there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so when they put that new scoreboard up, when they did the field, I really wanted them to keep that Cajun clock, and they did, and I'm so glad they did. Well, in the fall of 96, when I came, I didn't know if I could make it. I don't know if I was good enough. I'm standing next to BJ Ryan, and there's a left-handed pitcher that I'm trying to compete against to get a spot, and all the other guys. And so I had a bad outing. We had a practice. I pitched. I performed poorly. I went back to my apartment. I just, I was just down in the dumps. So in the middle of the night, I just walked back to the field, and I just needed to collect my thoughts. And really, I was thinking about quitting, honestly. I felt like I was wasting my time. I was wasting everybody else's time. I applied and to McGill University, which is one of the top schools in Canada, and I was accepted, and I left there to come here. So I get to the field. I sit in the stands. And on a scissor lift in the middle of the night is Coach Rove cleaning that clock.
Cool. Yeah, pressure spraying.
And he was pressure washing the clock.
Yeah.
And he's out there by himself. And, it might have been 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. And I saw that, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. I said, this is a Division I college baseball coach that is taking such pride in this program that he is up there in the middle of the night cleaning a clock. And I told myself, I'm going to do everything that I can. I'm going to put every ounce of effort into this because I want to play for this man. And that really drove me. And I'm so glad that I did that. I'm so glad I walked, to the park. That was a catalyst, that it set off a chain of events in my life that...
It's called fate.
It really was. I mean, coming down here was fate. Walking to that park that night was fate. Mm-hmm. Seeing what I saw was fate. And, I mean, thank God I did, because I would have missed out on one of the greatest things that's ever happened to me in my life. Wow. Besides meeting my wife.
She listening? Yeah. So, get that in there.
So, yeah, so that I hadn't told that story. I wish I would have been able to tell him that story, because he didn't even know that.
He didn't see you out there?
He didn't see me out there. So if he did, he probably would have been yelling at me to go back home and get to bed. But I wish I would have been able to tell him, you know, that story and some others. And I really was saving it. I don't know what I was saving it for, but I wanted to tell them in public. I wanted the public to know these things that they may not know about him, mm-hmm. and how important he was to me. And I also wanted him to know I was watching him. I was watching him and following him when he didn't even know it. And those small details that he was doing meant a lot to me. And I know I'm not the only one. And nothing says more about leadership than that right there. No words were spoken, 100% action. And someone else, you know, happened to be me, seeing it and appreciating it. And I appreciated it early. I've played with guys that hated Coach Rowe. You got situated. Maybe they didn't get the playing time.
Yeah.
They felt like they weren't, they weren't getting what they've earned or what they deserve, and didn't like them. Left the program with animosity and just, oh man, Coach Rowe.
That's every program today.
Yeah. But 100 out of 100. You talk to them now, and it just it took years to sink in, where they now, looking back, they're thinking of themselves, you know, they realize how important he was and what he did and why he did it and the impact that it's having on them now. I was lucky enough to know it then and see the significance then. But 100% of the guys that I've played with, the ones that maybe didn't appreciate it then, really appreciated it later on in their life.
I'm sorry.
No, I was going to just say that he says that so many times in his answers to questions, is that he was preparing everyone for life, not just baseball. You know, that's just the kind of guy he was.
Well, didn't he tell his pitchers, if you don't want me to come get the ball, be a warrior?
Yeah.
Is that what he tell y'all?
And he knew which guys...
Yeah,
which what makes a great coach, great coach, and he, just calling him a coach is not doing it justice. But I'm just saying, coach for you know, broad stroke here, a good coach knows how to
push buttons
or work a particular personality.
Oh, yeah.
So you know, you can have a coach. You call him a hard-nosed coach. You have a coach that's a player's coach.
Mm-hmm.
A good coach is both, or can be both, and he is who he is to match the personality that he's dealing with to get the best that he can out of him.
Well, I heard one story at the, I think it was Sunday night, where one of the players had said something about there was a scrimmage, and he was having a bad scrimmage. He came up the bat with the bases maybe loaded and stuff, and he didn't deliver.
Sport, Voorhees.
You remember the story?
Yeah.
You tell a story, because it was funny.
Well... apparently, he came up with the runners on and had a bad swing or whatever, popped up, struck out.
Yeah, he didn't drive any runs.
No, he didn't drive any runs, and Robichaud wasn't particularly happy with him and let him know that he wasn't happy with him. Voorhees came up, as the story goes, later on in the game, pretty much the same situation. Runners on, I think as Rob tells it, he hit it to Albertsons.
Yeah, that's what he said, hit it to Albertsons.
And he came around the bases, and when he got to the third base box where Robichaud was, he went, "Oomph, you," and headed on back to the dugout. where he started making mental plans to tell his parents he was about to be kicked off the team.
that he needs some money.
And would have to find another school. And
have to help pay for it.
Robichaud got him together afterwards and said, this is the kind of player I want.
That is not surprising whatsoever, because when you said that player rounded third and said F you, Robe maybe would have chastised him or said something, but deep down, Coach Robe would have said to himself exactly that this is the kind of guy that we want on our team.
He liked that combative nature.
Exactly why he liked Nathan. Remember Nathan Nelson?
Yeah. Oh, Nate. But he was a bulldog.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, he was.
Or he was thinking it worked, Coach Robe, as he ran. It worked. I told him it worked.
Well, it's like he says, though. You have to know the individual.
Yeah, yeah.
You have to know which button.
Yeah, the music in the background, that means a button for commercials. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Our special guest is former Cajun southpaw Phil Devey, and we will be back right after this.
Now, back to Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
I think Ken Myers punked you is what he did.
You're being punked right now.
Well, I'm always being punked by you.
You don't recognize the song?
Happy birthday.
Oh, that's so nice. That's so nice. Yeah. No, I didn't recognize you said that because I had in my mind that Ken Myers punked you on that name and then what he said about the LSU fans. So.
Yeah, it's Glenn's birthday. He's 13 today.
13, that's right. Times like five.
we don't get many celebrities in the studios here for us on this show.
If you're looking at me and calling a celebrity and on the show, did I walk into the worst show of all time in radio?
By the time we're through, it's a possibility. You were telling us about the LSU story when we were off the air. That's one you got to repeat. That is funny.
All right.
Warming up in the bullpen?
My freshman year, warming up in the bullpen, and I think I pitched with glasses on at that time. I'm pretty sure I did. So I'm about to go into the game, bases loaded, face Brandon Larson and Eddie Furness, one out. Tie game, I think it was like the fifth or the sixth inning, and a guy in the stand stands up and yells out, "Hey, Rick Moranis, who shrunk the kids?" So
did you laugh at the time or at least smile? Yeah.
I was like, man, they really do their homework. How did they know I was Canadian? So, no, that was pretty good. And like I said earlier, that's about the best thing I can say about LSU was that one guy that had that great comment for me. So
I was looking back at your days and some of the past teams and this and that and the other. You guys really banged on the door in 99, to the College World Series. And then we all know what happened in 2000. What was the difference in those two teams? What made the difference?
I'd hate to give us credit, but I will. And obviously, if it's a regret, I mean, I signed as a junior. I graduated from USL that same year too. So mm-hmm. I just got my degree, then get drafted. I never had a scholarship until my junior year, so I had a bunch of student debts to pay back, and so I signed as a junior. So I missed out on the opportunity playing the College World Series.
But if you were going to make any kind of bonus money at all, you almost had to sign.
Yeah, that was the time. So, I mean, it was very hard to pass up. But I did, I did work them as hard as I could because I think they knew deep down that I really wanted to come back. If you look at most, call it championship teams or successful teams, I'll go to hockey on this one, but the Edmonton Oilers in the 80s became a dynasty. But and Wayne Gretzky said it, that I think it was the Islanders that they lost to, and they went to the finals. And Gretzky kind of went by the Islanders' locker room, and nobody was celebrating. He said they were all had. He said everyone had ice bags on their knees and ice bags on their head, and guys, you know, cut up and getting stitched up, and you know everybody's happy, but they look like they just, you know, went to war and are licking their wounds. And Gretzky said immediately saw that, and he said, "Now I know what it takes to win the Stanley Cup." And so that was the mindset going in the following season.
Wow.
So I think for us and what we went through, we were one game away from going to the College World Series. And, it was a total blow. I mean, it was hard. But I actually just listened to the story yesterday. I had no idea. It was a podcast Coach Robe was on. He was telling the story about in 2000 and Scott Domann, and which I knew about this part, that he – because he lost one of the games in the Super Regionals, or he was the losing pitcher, and he didn't perform well, and he put the box score in his locker when we got back. And he wanted to see it every day the next year. And he said that if he gets a chance to go back to the College World Series, that he was not going to let it happen again. So, you know, for him, going through that experience made him a better pitcher and made him a warrior to prepare for 2000. So I think our defeat in 99 prepared them for what they did in 2000.
Right.
Well, the Cajuns, like I'm sure every other school with its history, has had some very tough characters as part that wore those uniforms.
And you have to. I mean, that's the secret of your success, especially at a mid-major level. But, you know, even the SEC schools and those types, I mean, you need strong leaders to get ultimately to the final prize or to be successful. And for us, we BJ and Trey Poland, who was a senior when I was a freshman, mm-hmm. you know, they came in and we talked about that specifically. And we said, man, in our years, we had a bunch of I won't say the word, but I mean, we had some jerks on our team.
Oh, you can say the word here.
Those
would be pendejos in the south of the border.
But that was how our team was, and we were fearless. I mean, we could have played the New York Yankees, and we still would have felt like we're going to battle. And so that's I know looking back. He's had other teams that kind of had that attitude too, kind of, I think, sporadically from our years to now. But I know he really appreciated, you know, the 97 through 2000 and the type of players that were on that team.
I told you the story about, I know I did. I just don't remember if I told you on the show or we were having lunch or something. About doing the interview with him and said, Tony, what this club needs is a brawl.
Yeah.
And Tony said, I don't know if they'll fight. Well, obviously, he didn't have that concern with your club.
No, we have had fights. I almost got choked out one day on the bus, for which maybe will be another story coming out. But no, we had a player on our team that just did not represent us properly in South Alabama, and he was a whole lot bigger than I was. And when he came on the bus, he sat in front of me, and I let him know what I thought about it. And so he decided to turn around and try to choke me to death. And so, you know, I was fighting for my life, and we were throwing blows. And next thing you know, we make a run after that. And you know, we kind of got together as a team and had a great year.
I tried to do that out in the lobby, and they all threatened to quit. So obviously we're going to have a great run at the end of this show. That's your commercial break. We need to pay some bills. We'll be back on Five Guys. Stories and Lives after this.
They're here to tell it like it is and how it was. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
That was Glenn's favorite song since it's his birthday. We're going to play that.
That's not Wayne Toops.
How did it say it was?
I know you got at least one Wayne Toops tonight, right? See, I knew that. Raymond fixed me up, I bet. There you go. We'll have Wayne Toops on there.
So, we having cake later?
Huh?
We having cake later?
Tomorrow night if you want to come. Tomorrow night. You see what y'all did? Y'all ruined my birthday. It's supposed to be at Leetsy's tonight with 20-something people. But
we can have a hurricane party tomorrow night.
That's possible. I hope not. No, what I was asking Phil a while ago is that I saw Tony go out to the mound 1,000 times to pull pitches and talk to pitchers, but I never saw him get upset. Did he, under his breath, get on you?
You just didn't see his face change. That's what you're talking about.
Well, yeah, kind of. Yeah. I'd see him rock back and forth, but I never saw him, you know. I don't know if y'all knows that, but he would in the dugout, he'd kind of sway side to side. And I don't think he knew it, but he was at church at Christmas Mass one time, and I was sitting behind him, and it was like he was in the dugout. He was swaying side to side. I think he always did that, even when he went to talk to y'all. But what did he actually say on the mound?
I don't remember a situation where he got on me pretty hard on the mound. I think most, you know, might be kind of boring, but he'd come out and kind of talk strategy or he'd come out and say, you know, look, I'm coming out just to kind of give you a break, try to change the tempo a little bit. Let's focus on this next guy. You know, you got runners on first and second, you know, one out. Let's try to get a ground ball here. Let's try to work him away. And then, I think he probably knew that was the approach for me because I was, I wasn't high strung, but I was.
You were Canadian.
I was Canadian. Yeah. I was a hockey player that happened to be pitching.
Yeah, exactly.
So I think he didn't need to wind me up anymore.
So laid back.
He figured that would be worse if he jumped me, and because the fire was burning pretty hot, you know, throughout the game anyways.
But did you ever see him lose it when he went out there?
Not publicly. He never did anything that would embarrass a player in public.
Right.
Now in practice. Oh, he's lit into not just me, but plenty of others. And so privately or in practice, yes, he would get on guys hard.
How bad would it be in the dugout, ever?
Yes, there's been plenty of times where I remember there was one game, which actually Trey Poland, if you remember him, but
yes.
You know, so we actually when I made the team, he put me to room with Trey Poland and BJ.
And you're talking about two of the left-handers, too.
Yeah, so I guess he wanted us together, but he wanted me to learn from Trey. And Trey was an unbelievable pitcher, and he was a great role model for me in watching him pitch. So my freshman year, I don't remember who we were playing, but he was our Friday night guy, and he you know, you couldn't beat him. And whoever we played started, it wasn't even a regular starting pitcher. They just threw a guy out there to start Friday night for the other team, implying that they're just going to waste this game. They already know Trey's going to beat him. Let's throw this guy and let's try to win the next two. And I told myself, you know what? I said, I want to be that guy one day that the other team's coach puts in a scrub because he already knows I'm going to beat him. And sure enough, and I think it was my junior year, I think we were playing UNO, and they put in a guy that was, I don't know, he might have been.
He was a right fielder, right?
Yeah,
he was pretty hefty. Didn't throw hard, and it was a 1-0 ball game to the eighth inning. And
he was livid.
And Coach Robe blasted everyone and said, "I can't believe that you guys are letting this scrub beat us. They basically gave up the game, and et cetera, et cetera." And I think we maybe scored one.
Who was that against?
I think it was UNO, but
it wasn't Northwestern. I heard a story about Northwestern when they were coming. They didn't know who they were going to throw.
Western Kentucky.
He went to the back of the bus and got the softest thrower he had, and he beat y'all.
Well, I think if I remember, I gave up a home run in the 10th inning. I think I gave up a home run in the 10th inning, and then we didn't score in the bottom of the 10th, and we lost by one, I think is how that game ended. But, he was – Coach Robe, his neck was red, and he was blasting everyone in the dugout that day.
How do you handle prima donnas, or did y'all have any? One he had in recent years, within the last 5 or 10 years, and I'll tell a story about that in a minute, but go ahead.
He didn't have to. We handled prima donnas, and prima donnas did not last on our team. They quit.
Right.
So
he told a story. He told a story a couple of years ago. He had one, and we were talking at the stadium, and he said, and it was, the guy was good. He said, "I'm going to tell you right now, if it wouldn't be for me, the players would have him taped to that center field pole out there." And, you know, but he said, you know, he's good, so they leave him alone, but, he, you know, it's hard to figure out, you know.
Yeah, no, I think we probably got to that player before Coach Robe had to.
Really?
Who was your ringleader back then?
In our time, my junior year, we had Kevin Cantrell was on the team, so he had been around the program for a while. But we had, and actually in 99, Doman was on the roster. He was a walk-on. Stephen Feehan was on the roster. He was a walk-on. I was on the roster. I was a walk-on. I think Rick Heidel might have been a walk-on as well.
Y'all had a hell of a walk-on
so
crew.
we did well in that department. I can't pinpoint to one or two specific people that we would say are the leaders of our team. But we had some seniors like Kevin that were on the team that were maybe kind of the voice of reason at times when we needed it. I think everybody kind of stepped up at the right time or at the appropriate times. So we had a good, real good mix of individuals, and it was like 99 and 2000. It's sometimes you just hit lightning in a bottle, I guess would be the term of just having all the right personalities together in one place. So, and I know that the team was in 2015 that made a run into the Super Regionals, 14 and 15. I think they had that too. And that 2015 team, I remember they lost 6, 7, 8 players to the draft and they're some top flight players. And the next year, they turned around and made it to the Super Regionals and almost won it again, and that was the same type of team. They just happened to have the right mix of players together on one field, and Coach Robe was the maestro of the orchestra, and just knew how to put everyone in the right places to get the right mixture.
It's called sports.
Yeah,
that's what it's called. Every sport, every level. And no matter how hard you work, you get that one year where everything just falls together like it did for y'all.
We're definitely fortunate for that. So it leaves for a lot of great memories.
I presume you paid attention to the club last year.
I did.
What do you think the problem was?
That's an on the spot question, but. I'll tell you the biggest problem, and I've said this before, and especially at our level, that to not have a frontline starter that you just know you when they're going in.
You think when Gutter went down that the writing was on the wall then?
I would say the writing was on the wall, but that combined with some other players that kind of got hurt along the ways, they always ran into, which all teams do, but it all kind of happened at the wrong times. And it was a constant search for who's our guy Friday night that's going to give us 8 innings, or maybe 9 or, 7 strong. And it was so hard to find. And when you go into your bullpen Friday night so many times and so many arms, you're in for a battle the rest of the weekend.
They never found it with any consistency at all.
Yeah. And that's, to me, that was the biggest problem. It starts with pitching, and they couldn't find it. So, I know there's. It sounds like there's a good mix of guys that are coming in, some JUCO transfers. There's a kid from Montreal that's coming in, which is great.
You're not prejudiced at all.
I've told Coach Rowe for 20 years that it's a proven fact that you can't get to Omaha without a Canadian on your roster. And that was Gordy O'Brien, of course. That wasn't me, but that was another Canadian recruit that I had, but. No, this kid that's coming in is supposed to be he's supposed to be very good. But
pitcher?
As a pitcher, right-handed pitcher. He's a tall kid. I was told he throws 93 to 96 the last few outings that he's had. I looked at his stats. He could probably work on his walk rate, but a good amount of strikeouts, which tells me he's got swing and miss type of pitches. And I promised him. He texted me when the word came out that Coach Rowe passed away, and because I spent time with him when he came. His parents came down. I talked to him for the whole 9 innings of how much Coach Rowe meant to me, and I thought about him when Coach Rowe passed. I was just sad for him that he was going to miss out on this opportunity, and he sent me a text saying how, offering his condolences, and I said, look, I said, when you come in town, I'm going to take care of you. I said, whatever I need to do, I'm going to, you know, watch all your bullpens. I'm going to come watch your games. Anything you need from me, let me know. But I want to help teach this kid. And the kids that come in, you can teach pitching, but you can't teach them the warrior mentality. You can try to get it out of them. You can try to kind of stroke that fire. They got to come in with some attitude, and you can teach pitching, but I'm hoping that some guys come in that are fearless, that are wanting to learn, that are ready to go to battle, and if you have that, you've got a chance to win.
It would seem to me then the particular selection of whomever it may be to replace Tony as head coach is going to be extremely, is there, what's a stronger word than extremely? Important.
Oh, I would hate to be in the, our AD's got, I would think this is the toughest challenge he's faced. If he doesn't know by now how important Coach Robe was to the university and to athletics and baseball. And, I mean, he was the culture of it. He created it. So the next coach that comes in, it really has to be someone that is, they've got to set their own tone and their own mark on the program. But I think it's going to be extremely important to be sensitive to kind of what Coach Rowe built. And it's going to take a really special person. So, good luck to that guy.
They will be replacing more than just a coach.
Yeah, and you can't replace him. I mean, he's irreplaceable. So you're someone else is going to get his job.
He'll be taking over for someone.
But you're not going to take over the personality.
No.
You're not going to take over who. I mean, Coach Robichaud was a one in a billion. He was a once in a generation type of person. I've likened him to a 12-year-old that gets a PhD in university. That just has something in their DNA that is just above everyone else. And I at the funeral, I was sitting next to someone that grew up with Coach Robe and his brothers. He was one of his brothers' best friends, and he said, "Man, in Little League," he said, "Tony was the team leader every single time, and everyone looked to him for everything." And I mean, he's a little kid. How does that happen? He just had this gift, and the best thing that happened to Coach Robe is at some point in his life, he knew what his purpose was, which, I mean, everyone else spends all their time trying to find their purpose on earth, and he knew it. He figured it out at some point, and nobody lived up to his purpose better than him.
You're listening to Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Our special guest this evening is former Cajun left-hander Phil Devey, and we'll be back with more after this.
The viewpoints heard on this program could be considered politically incorrect.
Good thing they're too old to care.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
This is Five Guys, Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Lie to me. No, that's what we do to you. Welcome back, everyone, to Five Guys, Stories and Lies. Don, Tom, Bruce, Glenn has given way to his phone for a little while. And Bobby Hardwin has joined us now that the St. Landry meeting of God knows what has finally concluded for the night.
I'm at the big microphone.
I know, and you need to get closer to the big microphone. You need to lean in a little bit. There you go. What were you covering tonight?
The St. Landry Bank Indians, American Legion team, had their end of the year function.
Oh, my heart is.
And that was more important than our show.
Yeah.
Well, I left early. I mean,
you're still rocking, huh?
Yeah. I got my photo and talked to some of the players and made my exit.
I'm so glad I asked. Thank you. Phil Devey is with us tonight. Phil, were the ice skaters still going strong when you showed up here in town?
All right. Next, other part to my story is when I did come here to try out, I actually brought my hockey equipment because I figured if I was going to come all the way down here and not make the baseball team, I'm going to go across the street and try to make the
really?
Hockey team. Oh, yeah.
Really?
Well, actually, my freshman year, so I made the team. We had there was an event where we went to the Cajun Dome, and they introduced us onto the ice in between periods.
Right.
And I can't believe I did this looking back, but I brought my hockey skates. I slipped them on while nobody was watching. And as everyone was coming out onto the ice, I skated onto the ice, and I did about two laps around the ice as fast as I could. I skated right at Coach Robe, and his eyes got so big like I was about to kill him. And I stopped about 5 feet in front of him and just sprayed him from the face all the
you
way
gave
down.
You gave him an ice shower, did
oh,
you?
Oh, yes,
really?
I did. And that was, I can't believe I actually made the team after that.
I can't believe he did not kill you after that.
No, so yeah.
Nicely played.
What position did you play, Phil?
I kind of moved around, but I was, I played my last probably 3 years playing hockey. I played defense. I was terrible at scoring, so.
Okay, here's the other half of that question. Was what the ice skaters were doing, was that hockey?
No, they weren't bad.
Surprised to hear that.
Yeah, no, they weren't bad. I mean, they were, you could take those guys and put them I mean, they were better than me. And it's not like I was that good of a hockey player, but, I mean, yeah, they weren't bad. I definitely give them credit. I mean, there was a guy that was on the team that we played against each other when I was young, and he was one of the better players.
What was his name?
It was Eric Kluche.
Yes.
He was a few years older than I was. But I did remember him because he checked one of our players from behind, cross-checked him into the boards, and the guy's head went flying into the boards. And I turned around and punched him right in the face. And we got in a fight, and I was younger than he was. And we never played against each other since, but I did remember. And then when I saw him in town, I think I hadn't seen him in years, but then he was at one of his bars, and I made it a point to go talk to him, and I said, "Hey, you remember me?" And he didn't, so it wasn't that memorable. But
my daughters have one of his broken hockey sticks.
All right.
Oh, all the girls love Cloutier, man. He was the rock star.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that would go fight for you, and they ended up getting one of his broken sticks.
How
after
could
the
you
game.
Tell? Everybody on that team fought.
Well, I'm sure that's what led to having so many people in the stands.
Yeah, 10,000 a night. Yeah.
So yeah, that was amazing. I couldn't believe there was cheerleaders at the game though. That was a little strange to see, but I got used to it. So it was all good.
Gator girls.
Yep. So you realize that you are our first ever live in studio Olympian.
2004, pitched for the
2004 Canadian baseball team.
It's one of the
and in Athens, Greece, no less.
Yeah, which was amazing. That was one of the greatest experiences of my life, hands down. I was a last minute invite on the team. I was with the Mariners. They were the rule was you couldn't be on a major league roster to play on the team, you couldn't be on the active roster. So there's a pitcher named Jeff Francis that just got called up, I think, to the Rockies right before the Olympics started. And so they called, and I made it in time for the opening ceremonies. And I ended up pitching against Australia and got the win.
Six shutout innings, if I remember right.
And then that got us into, like, the medal rounds. And we had to play Cuba. And the winner of that game went to the gold medal game. And we were losing by 3 runs. They bring in their closer, which was like the Michael Jordan of Cuba. This guy was on lockdown. They were not letting him, like, run away. And we lead off with a bomb, down by 2, maybe gets an out. We get 2 runners on. Now there's 2 outs. We had 8 left-handed hitters in our lineup, by the way, which is amazing. But a guy hits a missile to left field. We all thought it was a home run, walk-off to go to the gold medal game. The wind starts howling in from left. The guy scales the wall and catches it. Ball game, we lose.
Wow.
We were so demoralized. And then the next day we had to play Japan for the bronze, and it was like an early morning game, and they destroyed us. We just were so
didn't want to be there.
Down that we had just lost this. You know, I mean, I remember thinking we're going to the gold medal game to crap. So
yeah.
that was tough, but one heck of an experience, man. That reminded me a lot. Because at the time, I'd gone through some years of playing in the minor leagues and in the system and all that. And playing on the Canadian team brought my joy back of baseball. And it was just like it was when I was with the Cajuns, that I performed my best when I played for the people around me and for my coach. And I said that yesterday in an interview was Coach Rowe brought the best out of me, and I know that now because I was not the same pitcher when I left. Mentally, and my enjoyment of what I was doing was gone. When I didn't have Coach Rowe next to me, my enjoyment of the game was not there like it was.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and that really affected me. But the Olympic experience, I mean, that was amazing.
I think this is our top of the hour break music. Yep, appears to be. 1 hour down, five guys' stories and lies. We'll open up the phone lines if you'd like to be a part of it. 706-0111. Maybe we can talk Phil Davey into staying a little while longer before you take off.
I got all the time you need.
You got all the time we need. We need it all, Phil.
Live and local, this is Acadiana Sports Station, 103.7 The Game. With over 200 combined years of sports coverage in Acadiana, this is a gathering unlike any other.
Well, every week this show looks better to me.
Every week your eyesight gets worse.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies. Here's your host, Don Allen.
Thank you. Welcome back, everybody. Bobby Ardwin is with us now. Bruce Brown. Glenn Quibido. Tom Brown's taking a break. I'm Don Allen, and Phil Devey is our special guest this evening. Phil is a Canadian by birth, a UL pitcher by former trade, a former Canadian Olympian. Currently owns a bunch of bars.
So he's a Cajun by choice.
And restaurants and the like.
I drink at bars. I don't own any bars.
You don't own any bars?
But I have contributed.
How do you mean that?
In many drinks had in many different bars in town.
How many players do you think showed up for this thing?
Oh,
I mean, they were everywhere.
500 at least to 1,000.
That's how many showed up at Stadium Club after
there was at least 500 people there. I mean, you know, and there was a mix of people, so players and wives and former, you know, coaches and current coaching staff, some of his current players. So there was a great mix of people. Some of the Cajun Cooking Club were there. They helped out and cooked for everyone like they always do. So it was, you know, a great mix, but, you know, a great crowd.
Yeah, I saw Randy Hoffman Sunday night, and he couldn't speak.
It was a long night, but it was well needed for all of us. I mean, what we had, somehow some guys found, I guess, a bucket of baseballs and a few bats, and Jace Conrad, and I think it was Justin Marandino, and maybe a few other guys were doing a home run derby on the field. And I mean, it couldn't have been any better. I said Coach Robe is looking down on us, just loving.
Let me ask you this. Was Orris Cormier the bus driver when you were there?
Yes. Big O.
Did you ever hear about when Tony gave his eulogy, what he said about Big
O? No.
He said that Big O and the, I don't know, y'all trainer.
Yep.
After every road trip, the last game, they would play home run derby on the field.
Oh, I was there for this.
That was the Florida International. Who were y'all playing that was nationally ranked and y'all beat them? And Tony said he's picking up in the dugout and their coach is just chewing them out in the outfield. And he says he hears whack, whack. And he looks out there and Big O and them are playing home run derby. And a guy of a nationally ranked team is reaming his team in the outfield, and balls are flying out there. He had to pull them off.
No, that I don't remember, but they do home run derby, and I think we were playing an exhibition game in New Iberia, or maybe it was in Abbeville. So the park was a little bit smaller,
and they gave themselves
okay. So, but they gave themselves 10 swings each, and all the guys were watching. Everybody's making fun of them, and on the very last swing, Big O hits it out. And, I mean, that was the biggest ovation I've ever heard for a home run in my life. Yeah, that was awesome.
Did he do karaoke for y'all?
He was awesome. We really enjoyed him. He used to make us watch the worst movie ever made, though, because he was in the movie. It was some old Cajun swamp movie, Swamp Thing.
Swamp Thing might have been.
And he's got one line in it. He made us watch the entire thing. And his line is maybe with, like, 10 minutes left to go. And he's in his thick Cajun accent. Who did not vote out there? And boy, we heard it. I mean, it might have been 2 o'clock in the morning. Everybody woke up. Everybody heard it. We had to rewind it 50 times. And yeah, he was a trip, a good character.
Well,
for sure.
Tony did one of three eulogies at that funeral. And when I say it, Don always says, "I can't believe you said it." And I said, "That's one of the best funerals I've ever been to." It lasted 2 hours, and nobody wanted to leave because Tony did like 15 minutes. It's almost like stand-up comedy.
Wow.
You know? And and somebody else told me, he said, "Oh, well, you should have heard him do the eulogy for so-and-so." And that's the thing, whether he was speaking at a clinic to you guys or at a funeral, you were mesmerized listening.
He was such an incredible speaker. And again, I'll tell you a quick story. My freshman year, I'd call my parents and or some friends back home, and I'm trying to explain to them, all these things that he's saying and the way he says it. And man, you should listen. You should hear this guy speak. He's unbelievable. Mm-hmm. But when I'm trying to explain it, I just cannot do it justice. So I went to a CVS or to a store and I bought a tape recorder. And
Before YouTube, right?
Well, before yeah. you, I wish YouTube existed, but I'm so thankful that it does exist now. Wow. Because I'm so happy that I can watch them at any time and listen to them.
Yeah.
But I got the tape recorder. I sat in my locker, and he's doing one of his speeches, and I hit record, and I'm recording it. And it goes on for a while, and then he stops talking, and so I reach back, and I'm kind of got it hit in my pocket, and I go to hit stop, and I hit play by mistake, and the volume was on full blast, and it might have been like 2 seconds
way
of like
go,
a loud,
Phil.
So I hurry up and boom, turn it off, and I'm looking around, and okay, he didn't notice, so we all start leaving the locker, and I'm like, oh, I got this great tape. I said, I can't wait to send this to my parents or replay it and listen to it, and yeah, I'm 1 foot out the door, and he grabs me by the shoulder. He's like, all right, give me the tape.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, oh man. So I'm telling him, oh, coach, I really wanted my parents to hear you speak. And he said, look, I can appreciate all that, but I know there was a lot of, some swear words in there and some things
yeah, that
I don't want them to hear. And so give me the tape. So
he told me that once, but he said the scariest thing, especially today, was that he had to be aware whenever he spoke to the team, what he said, because there had been a couple of college coaches fired.
Mm-hmm.
Because some player was sitting there
yeah.
when a coach was reaming him out in the outfield after losing.
Yeah, and he's got his camera on.
Yep.
And he's
yeah,
he's taping all
yeah.
of this.
No, I can certainly appreciate that. I mean, in today's generation, you just never know, and you can catch a 1 minute or 30 seconds of mm-hmm. something that he said that you missed the entire message. But you just focused on this one.
It's taken out of context, and it happens all the time.
Happens all the time. So, yeah.
And the way the parents are today, their kids are soft, a lot of them, and they're not used to having that. And, especially football players. I mean, if you can't handle that kind of toughness and blame, you shouldn't play the sport.
It's a different world. We talk about it all the time, wondering if Coach Robes changed, if he's changed his position. I'll tell you another quick story. A couple of years ago, it was alumni weekend, so came to watch, and we're sitting in the stands, and guy was playing right field. I think he got drafted by the Yankees that year. Big guy. He was probably their best hitter that year, 1 or 2 years ago.
Sensley?
Yeah. So Sensley, ball gets hit to him in right field, and he should have made a play on it. And he kind of jogged to it, let it drop. The guy gets on base. But he should have hustled and made the catch, and he didn't. And so I was sitting next to Mazziotti, and I forget who else, and we kind of look at each other like, man, did he not – he should have caught – why didn't he go after that ball? So then we all kind of sat, and we're like, okay, what's Coach Robe going to do? Because if it was at our time, I'd be probably going back home rather than go back into the dugout to face what I'm about to face. And so – inning ends, he goes back in the dugout. They go back out defensively, and he's not in the game.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, I'm so glad that I saw this. And sure enough, in that game, they ended up losing. Sensley's spot came up in the lineup with bases loaded. And he was hitting maybe 310 or whatever it was. And so now you've got someone that, you know, it doesn't say you weren't going to be successful, but your best bat, you took your best bat out of the lineup to prove a point.
Absolutely.
And we said it that 1,000 times out of 1,000, no matter what the situation was going to be, Coach Robe was going to make a point to make his players better. That overrode any victory of a game. That the win of that game was nowhere near as important as the message that it sent to Sensley and to the other players. And I bet you Sensley to this day remembers that.
Wow.
Phil, was there one team that Coach Robe really liked playing the most?
Ours, for sure. No, I'm just saying that. But I think I said earlier, I always thought that, you know, the 97 to 2000, I think because of the type of players, I think represented. And then the 14-15 team, and not to discredit any other teams because I don't know, but and I think every team that he's had has had its own, I guess its own personality that he's appreciated. So, but, you know, deep down, Coach Robes, as he says, he's a country boy from Crowley.
Yep.
And that brings out a certain personality. And when you got a group of guys that are just, you know, hard nose, old school type of guys. I mean, to me, that's just really fun to coach.
Was there one school that he liked playing against?
He's
more
talking
than...
about an opponent.
Oh, an opponent. I'm sorry, an opponent. I mean, the South Alabama series were always good. And I heard Steve Kittrell.
He was there.
Yeah,
he
I heard
he
that, which is awesome.
He was there.
I know he didn't like Lamar too much. So I think there were some battles there.
What was the issue with that?
They're in Beaumont. That's the first issue.
The coach.
about that.
I forget the coach's name, but he had been around Lamar for a little while, and I think he crawled under our skin a little bit. I don't remember the reason behind that. I think there was a background to it, but
we never went over there. I mean USL would never win there. Invariably, the wind was blowing in. You know, it was a pretty decently sized park to begin with, but it was always, it seemed like, blowing in. And third, it always appeared that the four umpires of the apocalypse were winning the game that particular weekend.
How did he handle the series with LSU?
He always made it a point. Actually, I remember my freshman year, you know, we won. It was my first college win, and he was adamant that he did not want anyone to go on the field to celebrate. He said, act like you expected it. He wanted us to just go like it was any other game. And that's how he always approached it. He knew the surrounding was going to bring it to its another element. And I think he loved playing LSU like he loved playing any top-rated school because he wanted the challenge. And he wanted to see how we would react in those elements. And so he always brought that on. I mean, he wanted us to play the best possible teams at all times. And that's how it should be. I mean, but I think he made it a point to always kind of settle us down. Like this is, you know, I don't want to use the cliche. It's like any other game. But it wasn't, he didn't give it an added emphasis because it was LSU. But he liked us playing those teams because he wanted to see how we matched up, and it was a test.
Did you ever have any on-field troubles with other teams?
I don't think when I was at USL that we had – like, we never had any bench-clearing brawls or anything in my years. You know, there was a few, you know, professionally that's happened, but not at USL. We've had some John back and forth with opponents. We've had some, you know, some hard plays at home or some hard slides or, you know, maybe we hit one too many guys or.
You ever throw at anybody intentionally?
Oh, wow. All right. Here's the story. So this is so Western Kentucky. There was a kid on the other team he was their leadoff batter and he was from Canada. And we played Western Kentucky at their place first and then they came here. And he killed us. He was hitting like 800 against us, and I never met him before, but we met kind of in between games. You know, it was kind of rare two Canadians playing against each other in Division I baseball at that time. It's gotten a little bit more common now, but I think there was like an implied friendship behind it. So maybe it was the next year they came to us, but they came to play us. It was freezing cold. He was leading off. and I threw the first pitch right at him, and hit him pretty good. And he went down pretty hard.
Did Tony tell you to do it?
No. Coach Robe would never tell anyone to hit anyone. That's never happened. But if you've got the type of pitcher on the mound, if you got someone that's the right person that's pitching on the mound, you don't need to say anything.
You don't need to
say anything. And so he would have never told me that. And I didn't do it because he hit so well against us. I wanted to set the tone that we're not friends. And it's cold out, and I wanted to make them real uncomfortable, so I intentionally hit him, and I think every batter after that probably stood about 5 feet off the plate.
Oh yeah, I've seen.
And I don't know if there was a ball hit out of the infield that game.
I tell you what, he rarely got to see his sons play, but he came to a Notre Dame Crowley High game one time, and Justin was pitching. And Crowley High had a center fielder that was – he might have been a freshman or something. And he was an aggressive kid, I'll say that. And Justin hit him early. Later in the game, nobody expected it. But Crowley brings that kid in to pitch. On deck is Justin. And look, I remember looking at the guy next to me. I said, you know what's fixing to come. And Tony went. And he called Justin to the fence. And later I found out he told Justin, he said, you know what's coming. Take it like a man and go to first base. Well, there's not going to be any brawls.
About $1,000 if that's exactly what he was going to tell him.
Oh, no, that's what he told him. You know what's coming. And that, it came. First pitch, place went nuts. So, but he told him, he said, you go straight to first, and he did. Justin went to first base.
Your unwritten rules.
The good old days.
Five Guys, Stories, and Lies. We'll be back with more in just a moment.
Now, back to Five Guys, Stories, and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Gotta get myself off the side of the road.
This is Five Guys, Stories, and Lies, 706-0111 is your phone number if you'd like to be a part of the conversation. That's cool. Phil, did you watch the All-Star game?
I didn't watch much of it, no.
No, I didn't watch much of it either, but you watched enough of it, right?
Yeah, bits and pieces.
Are they juicing the baseball?
Oh, there's no doubt. There's no doubt.
When you watch an average of 465 feet a home run, yeah, they juicing the balls.
Yeah, but those are softball pitches, too.
That's true. I looked at my grandson, and I said, so how many has he hit in a regular season? He said eight. And I went, so that's the difference between hitting against lobbing the ball and pitching.
He's talking about Guerrero.
Guerrero.
Oh, yeah. Eight. I would have liked to have seen that.
You did?
But I didn't watch the home run derby, no.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah, I haven't even watched the highlights of it either. But yeah, he's an unbelievable hitter for sure. And the science in hitting has changed, or the technology in teaching hitting and the approach to hitting and what guys are trying to do and elevate
they
the
want
ball.
Lift,
and that, so that part of it has changed, but that has translated to this many home runs. Something's going on.
Verlander's right.
Yeah, something's going on.
I agree. I think they probably are making some, you know, minute changes with the baseball and the seams or how they put it together.
Did
you watch last night? If you watched last night, I think there was one pitcher who did not throw 96 to 98. One out of everybody out there. Everybody throws stuff pushing 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
Everybody.
And, I mean, and if you take that kind of velocity and you make contact to it, the ball's going to travel. So you can make an argument that the combination of the increase in velocity and hitters now maybe adapting to it a little bit, or the way they practice hitting, I mean, they go in with some high velocity machines and practice hitting off of 100 miles an hour.
Even if you throw it that hard, that ball better be moving.
Because
if it's a straight line, they're going to get you.
Absolutely.
They're going to get you.
Did you hear Major League Baseball's response? Since they bought Rawlings, they said, they didn't say they juiced the balls. They said there's less drag on the balls. Did y'all hear that? Now, what the hell does that mean?
I didn't hear that.
Oh, yeah. No, there's less drag on the ball. That's their response. Huh?
It means it seems smaller.
But I noticed that they asked a couple of the outfielders, are the balls juiced? Oh, no, they're fine.
Yeah, no.
But you ask a pitcher like Phil used to be, is it juiced? Oh, hell yes.
Well, let me ask you this. When Ben McDonald came over here and pitched, and he kind of struggled, and afterward I asked him what the problem was, and he told me that, I think it's at LSU, they used either Diamonds or Wilsons, and when they came here, they used the opposite. And he said the seams weren't as high, and so he couldn't get the movement. That you found that to be true?
No, 100%. And actually, my curveball went away professionally. I used to have a good breaking ball, and
yeah, we used
a couple of years. It was hard. Well, it wasn't the type of ball, but the seams are smaller, and so the grip is different. So my breaking ball wasn't as sharp, and so I had a hard time adjusting to the new ball. That my pitch wasn't reacting like it used to. So there's definitely a big difference in the major leagues. The seams on the balls are even smaller than the ones they use in the minor leagues.
Oh wow!
So that you really do as a pitcher, you have to adapt to it.
What do they use, Wilsons or Rawlings in major leagues?
I think Rawlings, but it's not the brand of the ball. But I think they use Rawlings. It's just
like
how it's stitched.
Yeah.
Majors bought Rawlings. Yeah,
it's Rawlings. Yeah.
So it's Rawlings. But in college over here, y'all use Diamonds, didn't y'all?
No, I think we use Rawlings or Wilson.
Well,
I don't know.
I think it was Wilson.
But it's just that type. You know, there's five different types of balls per company, and one has these big seams, but it definitely makes a difference.
Yeah, Ben McDonald said that. He said that's why I wasn't effective tonight, because it was a different ball. And it didn't have as big a seams as I have at LSU.
Well, and that's, you know, some pitchers in the big leagues adapted by doing different things to the ball. Or you see guys that have a combination of sunscreen and and rosin on their arm, because it almost becomes like glue. And you know, you see them rubbing their arm all the time and picking up the ball, and that's just to get some grip. Or you see they got pine tar all over their hat, and it's pretty obvious, but
sometimes they put it on their neck when they're really dumb.
Yeah, well, so that doesn't happen as much in college, and part of it is because the seams, you can make the ball dance a little bit easier. And so professionally, you know, some guys go to, I wasn't smart enough to try all that.
So are you teaching this to your 12-year-old?
I didn't have a lefty on the roster this year, but we might have one next year, and he will learn how to balk to first and get away with it.
Okay, Bill,
we can't thank you enough for joining us this evening.
No, it's my pleasure. Any chance I get, which, well, it seems like I spent more time talking about me, which is embarrassing. But any chance I have to talk about Coach Robe and his legacy and his impact on me and in this community, I'll do it all day, every day. That's important to me, that the public knows how important of a man that we lost.
I think the public is well aware of that by now.
Yeah, okay.
You did a good job with that tonight.
Yep, so. Stories and lies, heavy emphasis on the stories tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you again for joining us.
Yeah, hey, my pleasure. Maybe we'll see you at Chopsticks, your restaurant, right?
No, it's good. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, it's your birthday, right?
Yeah.
How come these guys aren't taking you there for your birthday?
Well, they should, huh?
I mean, it sounds on air like you like each other. I guess you don't like each other that much.
We're incredibly cheap, that's all.
That's what it is.
That's the key to it, Phil. We're cheap.
I'll get you set up. Come on.
Yeah, we like him fine. We're
come on, I'll get you set up.
Chopsticks?
Okay, read that deal. Okay.
Thank you, Phil.
Phil Deavy with us tonight, former Cajun pitcher. And we've got, I don't know, a little over a half hour of Five Guys stories and lies left. So when we get back, we'll lie a little bit.
They're here to tell it like it is and how it was. This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Bobby's getting down over here in his little corner luxury chair.
St. Andrew Parish is the Zydeco capital, man.
Push your button, Quibs. You turn the button off probably during the break.
What a surprise.
There we go. Yeah, we should be good now, Glenn.
Mr. Positive over here.
I'm positive you pressed turned your button.
Yeah, I'm positive with you.
That's
you
what happened.
Burn me up sometimes.
You always press his button.
So. Yeah.
Great segment with Phil Devey. I really enjoy listening to those stories, and I just feel like I need to say this.
He's going
to
calm the waters.
As we wind down on the Coach Robe deal, is it like we've all been around here for 40 years or more, you know, in some cases. I don't think I have ever seen a public response to a coach like I saw this past Sunday with the people at the Cajun Dome. And a lot of those people probably don't know him. They just felt compelled that they had to come out and tell the family, you know, you have our sympathy. And, I mean, I just think that speaks more in terms of what the man was about than anything else, is just seeing all those people that showed up for something
they
like that.
They know what he stands for.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly, you know, and I just felt like I needed to say that because it moved me seeing all those people there.
It was, you're right. They probably had, I think an estimate was like 3,000 to 5,000 people go through that convention center. And if you were there, you know it took probably 50 minutes to get.
Or more.
From the door to the casket. So, you know, but I wrote a piece and again, look at Don over there. You know, you can't say you or me or I in Don's world. But anyway, his father, anybody that's met his father knows where Tony Robichaux got his personality,
his value system,
everything. His mother and his father, Ray and Sylvia Robichaux. And they're to be given a lot of credit for the way they raised him and all of their children. And, you know, again, Mr. Ray, Miss Sylvia passed away a couple years ago. Mr. Ray's there. He's almost 80 years old. And I tell you, he is such a special individual. It's unbelievable. And you see it in his family. And, you know, the people that were there and met the family and met him, they know what I'm talking about. So,
wasn't the only sad moment that the university has experienced this week. And I think Bruce has the rest of that.
This morning, Toilette Malcolm passed away at age 50. Toilette, for those who don't cover track and field, was the preeminent, well, she's still the best track and field athlete that the women's side has ever had. She would rank with Kim Perrott and Kyla Hall as the best athletes, period, in school history. She's the first woman's athlete from track and field to be in the UL Athletic Hall of Fame. She came here from San Jacinto Junior College in Texas and promptly turned a moribund program around. They won conference indoors and outdoors in 93. The men won indoors and outdoors that year, too. Nobody's done that since, to win all four major team championships under her. She was a sprinter and a long jumper. She had been battling cancer. She married Patrice Alexander. People will remember him as defensive monster player for the Cajuns. They have two kids. She had been battling for some time, and she was able to make the track and field reunion this spring at the Classics weekend. And the former teammates were just gravitating toward her in the social Friday night. Getting their pictures taken with her and everything, and so you see the magnetism that she had. And she that very night she had a downturn in her health and had to leave and go back to Houston. And she passed away this morning. And Coach Badall called me and let me know. And she was a special athlete. She was always had something to say. She wasn't shy, and she would tell other athletes what they needed to do to get better, because she wanted everyone to get better around her. And she was just leadership was just, you know, what she was about, and tremendously talented. She ran for Jamaica in the 92 Olympics in Barcelona, in 4x1, and it's just I hate to see things come in numbers, but losing Tony and then losing Toilette in the same week's time is, yeah, it's rough, because it's just anybody who follows track and field over there knows how special she was to the program and the school.
Well, yeah, prayers and thoughts to their family.
Yeah, it's a rough year for obviously. UL.
Oh, gosh.
UL, yeah. I mean, you know, you had Garrett O'Connor, you had Big Lenny, you had Coach Glasgow's daughter.
Yeah.
That's five. That's not three, that's five.
Yeah. And you had the bus driver that was there forever.
Yeah, so it's been a tough, tough year for UL this year. And in that respect, hopefully it'll be a better year coming up.
It's got to be.
Yeah, I would hope so.
Yeah.
I would think so. But I don't know. What else you got, Tom?
Well, I was wondering if Don talked to Megan Rapinoe since the soccer World Cup is over.
Yeah, she sent me to tell you you're an idiot.
Oh, okay. Well, great. I'm glad she feels that way.
But, Tom, that's okay. You're in the same boat as me. So only Don and her are the intellectuals.
Don and she.
Yeah.
And she.
Don
that's
she.
Right.
Oh, look, here we go. English teachers
Thank
in
you,
the
Bobby.
House.
Appreciate that.
Yeah.
No, feel free to take off.
Well, on a...
What?
On
feel
a...
free to take off on it.
Oh no! I'm. Look, I don't agree with the politics, but that's one talented soccer team, you know. And I'm not a big soccer fan.
Yeah, they are.
But they are fun to watch, man.
They're the best in the world.
They are fun to watch.
So here's the question: did they increase the popularity in women's soccer or not?
I think it's kind of like anything, you know, on that side. It's kind of like what we talk about with softball all the time, too. You know, it's like you've got your core. Loyal fans that enjoy the sport, and they're always going to be there to support it and cheer for it. But I don't know if it actually increased.
Well, if it didn't increase it, it decreased it. You think winning the World
when you're
Championship
talking
decreased
but
it?
But you're talking about like a monumental increase. I mean, I know more people watched
Nobody
it.
Said monumental.
Okay, then it increased it then. Here we go with the speech.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing about it is... You know, they didn't endear themselves to the world community. There's always complaints about certain politicians making the United States look bad in the world's eyes. And some of the things that they did in winning and the way they handled winning, it didn't help. And all you got to do is read some of the newspapers from England and France and some of the other papers. And it's those the damn Americans.
Yeah, and damn Americans that beat all the countries that those newspapers are writing for.
Sure, sure.
Them damn Yankees.
Yep. And so, but look, there's a certain way to handle things. It's just like what Phil said about Robe when they beat LSU. Act like you were supposed to do it. Don't act like you're the king of the world, that you have to embarrass somebody. Act like you knew it was coming. Now, you telling me they're not mature enough to handle that?
They didn't know that was coming.
When they beat, Thailand 13-0?
Oh, well.
Give me a break.
That's how bad Thailand was, yeah.
Well, they
could. Yeah, so you got to act like you just beat France 13-0?
Let's hope that they didn't go into the World Cup thinking they weren't going to win, because that would not be the athlete's mentality to have in that situation.
I would think they did.
I think they went into that thinking that they were going to win it all and stuff like that. But, you know, some of the stuff that she said, you know, I don't think you're going to see her on the cover on the front of a Cheerios box.
No. 706-0111 is the number to call.
Which one of them is on the cover?
706-0111.
ESPN this week.
ESPN's a different animal.
No, I'm just asking which one is on the cover, because one of them is, if it's not Rapinoe, it's going to be Morgan.
It's going to be Morgan, yeah.
I thought the goalie was the most underrated.
That was an incredible save.
She was standing on her head.
Well, wait, let me just go back and say one thing about Rapinoe. MSNBC had to apologize today for their live coverage of something she said at the end.
She dropped the F-bomb.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, so, I mean, come on now.
Yeah.
She's talking about...
she is what she is.
Yes.
Yeah. Also pushed the flag to the side so they could do their... mumbo jumbo routine, accepting the trophy. It's
like taking the CL out of class.
Yeah. Thank you, Bobby. That's a St. Landry expression, I think. Let's go to the phones. What
we got Phil on the line.
Oh.
Let's keep it going with the conversation that we've been having.
Yeah, Phil, what do you have?
I know you brought that up for me, Tom. I told you Sunday, man. I said I didn't watch a game of the cup. And Don was going to probably try to get me to rationalize it. But I'll tell you, Don, I think the girls, this is my opinion, I think the women think they're bigger than the game itself, and especially when you hear Rapinoe say stuff like, we want to change the world. And bringing politics into sports, I'm so tired of it. The idea that they can use the game that people want to watch and enjoy as for their political platforms, why can't they pick another venue? Why can't they go protest somewhere at the White House or something? Why do they have to screw up a game at an occasional post-game press conference, F Trump? You know, and I know that there are members of this team that are not fans of Trump, but it's just low class. I mean, plus now they've got a poster come out with her and her girlfriend on it, where they're, you know, in the El Buffo. You know, I don't know what the point of the poster is, but they're behind each other, so that's appropriate, you know?
Well, buckle up, Phil, girlfriend, because Don's about to turn loose on you.
I'm waiting for it, Don, because they're low class. The women are, they think they're bigger than the sport. They think they're bigger than the sport, and there's no place for it. If they hate the salary structure, and I thought this was supposed to be amateur sports. Maybe I'm thinking of the Olympics, but if they're going to protest not getting enough money, why not just not play?
Well, you know what?
You know, make a statement that way.
When you're talking about equal pay, I remember years ago, and it's just like us. We were all journalists, sports journalists, and I remember a cartoon, and it had a sports writer sitting in the middle of the Superdome typing on a typewriter, and there was nobody in the stands. And the caption was, if I could fill up the stands, then maybe I would get paid more money than me sitting here typing by myself. Not that they're playing by themselves, but they don't draw the attention that the men do. It's all a matter of economics. Yeah, I mean, it's just like women's basketball. How do you compare those two? You know, you go to the Cajun Dome for a women's game, and there's what, 100 people?
100 people.
And then you go to the men's game, and there's 7,000. So if you would say, man, we want equal pay, how do you?
When was the last men's game that drew 7,000?
That was a number that just came out of my head. All right, professor. Yeah, they have 3,000. Beats the hell out of 100.
Yeah.
Even if they had 700, they'd have seven times as many.
But that's what I'm saying. So all this equal pay stuff, you know, put it on paper. How many? Just put it on paper. What? How many fans do you draw compared to the men's World Cup? It's not even close. And
that's not about what the equal pay for the women's team versus the men's team is about.
Everything is about performance and what money is generated for
performance.
The job.
They've won the world championship
for the job.
Oh. Well, and there's no such thing as amateur anymore below the college level.
Somebody this week.
They're getting paid to be on that team. They're getting their expenses paid for. They're getting training paid for. They're getting salaries, you know. So there's nothing amateur about it. Yeah, they're getting endorsements. They're even on their jerseys now.
Phil, I'm still listening to you. They're not.
You got us cranked up, and we were waiting for Professor here to give us a lesson.
Phil, I got a question. I got a question. And I respect your opinion. I have no problem with that. You're a Democrat, right?
Who, me?
I knew that was going. No, he's being facetious, man.
Don, I knew you were. Don, I knew you were a liberal way back when you were doing your show and talking. So
hardcore.
But Don's not a Democrat. He's an independent.
Yeah. Tell that to me again.
These two to the left of me are Republicans. They're Trumpies, and there's a difference.
Oh, jeez, Louise.
Phil,
man, Phil, you ought to sit here with this guy. I'm telling you what, he'll drive you insane. Man. I got an appointment with a psychologist tomorrow.
I'm having indigestion right now.
Yeah,
Phil, we got to take a break. Thanks, dude, for the call.
I just go to Goodwill.
This is Five Guys Story. Well, there's no Goodwill here tonight. Stories and Lies. 706-0111 for the time we have left. We'll be back.
The viewpoints heard on this program could be considered politically incorrect.
Good thing they're too old to care.
Well, that's easy for you to say.
This is Five Guys Stories and Lies on 103.7 The Game.
Now,
We need to update this music, you know? We need to update this music.
Of course, I didn't ask for that.
That's just more work for Phil.
Music is great.
Yeah, I know, but it's the same music every week. That's all I'm saying.
What, it's Republican music? Is that what you're getting at?
No.
You said good. Something for Phil.
No, wait, this would be good.
If it was Republican music, we would have barf bags in front of us.
You would, but you know, the audience out there knows.
Well, what's some independent music we could play?
I don't know what.
I don't know, Phil. What do you think?
What do you think?
Let's talk to the wizard for a moment.
CD. What? What? No, that was a setup, dude. That was a setup. You wrong for that. That was a setup. And you sat there like nothing was going on.
Whoa, with the music?
Yeah, y'all need to stop conspiring. Yeah. I know he gets you an hour before the darn show.
Oh, be quiet. You got a birthday wish today.
Yeah, happy birthday.
And you got your Wayne Tubes.
Googling.
And you got Tubes. You know.
Yeah, and also got Don on my butt all night.
So basically a typical episode of Five Guys Stories and Lies.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much.
It's such a great day that Glenn's wife let him drive the good car tonight.
No, because you made a comment. Tom made a comment to my wife. I used her vehicle last week. Tom made a comment to her. You know. Tom said my vehicle really rides nice. And so I was leaving home today. I said, let me have your vehicle because Tom likes it to ride nice.
It does.
Tom, yeah. It ride does. Nicely. It's an adverb.
Oh, okay.
There we go.
Listen, I'm not in college anymore. I'm 67.
Adverbs, pal.
So back to the music.
No, I can give a damn about
what do you think?
I think we could definitely spruce it up a little bit.
How about a little heart, man?
No.
We have that.
No.
No.
Play kidney.
You don't like heart?
Get out, Glenn.
I thought we were going to Stephen A. Smith or whatever.
Talk?
No. No. Well, you saw the article where the NBA wants to change the name of owners to governors, that you can't be an owner of an NBA team anymore.
Well, that's more Adam Silver than anything.
Is that a slave connotation there?
What do you think?
Yeah,
I think so.
Well, it's more Adam Silver thing because Adam Silver was the first one to kind of bring this up a couple weeks ago.
All right, because you've been seeing that probably.
I don't think it's going to wind up becoming official, but it's something that they're just talking about at this point. Maybe it will be like formally in like contracts.
Nobody's going to use that. No media is going to use that.
Yeah. What, governor?
Yeah, they're not going to use
it. How stupid is that?
Pretty stupid.
It is pretty weird. It's like, why are you doing that? Like, what's next? You're going to try? It just doesn't make sense.
Well, what's wrong with owners? They own the team, right?
Exactly. You know, like, it's just like the injured list.
But they own the team, and they own the players.
Well, it's not like they want to call them masters.
Owned. Yeah, right.
Well, you know what? The players ain't got to accept $33 million a year.
This is true. They can throw that back in there.
Go play on the street somewhere or something. You don't have to take the 33. Go start your own league. Do what you want to do. Go to Europe. But you know what? Yeah, I own the team. So you working for me. I worked at a newspaper. My publisher was my boss. Hey, let me tell you, sign my check, I call him whatever he wants.
If they go to Europe, I think they still call them owners over there.
I think so. And I don't think, you know, that's what I'm saying. So what, you own a Burger King and you go like, oh, so you're the governor of Burger King?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And yes. He's the governor of New York and you're the governor of Macy's and you're the governor of so-and-so. Man, we have a hell of a lot of
I'm the president of my household. I am the president
of
my household.
Well, you're the only damn one at your house. I mean, it's easy. You're the president, CEO, COO. Yeah. You
I'm like those guys on In Living Color. I got 17 jobs.
17?
17 jobs, man. I'm the.
You
I'm,
eat, sleep, and go to work. What's the rest? Whew. So what? So anybody agree with governor?
No, I just think it's stupid. It's just another political issue that doesn't need to be even
Bobby's
addressed.
Thinking. Bobby's thinking. He's on the clock.
Thinking.
He's on the clock.
He's thinking about what he's going to have to eat after we get through here.
And next will be which team nickname can we not have anymore because it offends somebody.
Redskins aren't changing.
That'll never change.
That's not changing.
Nor should it.
No, and I agree. Florida State's not changing.
So,
well, don't they have the endorsement from the community with the Seminoles' name?
They've had the endorsement for years.
That's what I'm
decades.
Saying.
But didn't Ole Miss change?
Hey, again.
Well, no, they've never officially changed the name.
They're the Land Sharks now.
They never officially changed it from Rebels to Land Shark.
Because there's no land sharks, just like Don's favorite. You know, San Jose or whoever it is never got approval from the banana slugs. So how would you get approval for the banana slugs?
No, you have to go to the California legislature, so you're going to have an excellent shot at that happening.
I mean, it's better than the Long Beach
State
dirt bags.
Huh?
The dirt bags of Long Beach State.
You know, we played my little grandson's baseball team played a team from Alabama, and that was their name, the dirt bags.
Yeah.
It was written down the side of their pants, the ugliest uniforms in America.
Yeah, it comes from Long Beach State.
Yeah, they got it from Long Beach in California.
That's their dirt bag.
Yeah. They're a damn good team, though, I'll say that.
But, yeah, that's their baseball team.
I would think they were probably talking about sliding in with dirty pants. That's why they came up with dirt bags.
That's such a special name.
Everybody's looking at everybody like, well, what the? Where
no, we're looking at Tom. What is he talking about?
I don't know. That's what I was about to ask you.
It's time to go away. Five got.
Oh, yep. It is time to go.
Time for Yellowstone.
We have a show next week. Please.
Yeah, y'all have a show next week. Astros on the West Coast, so y'all be going the full 6 to 8.
Yeah, 2 hours.
All right.
I won't be here, but y'all will have a show.
Where are you gonna be?
SEC Media Days.
Oh, that's not right.
Who's gonna be running the media?
SEC.
SEC Media Days.
He's going with R.
Yeah.
He's got him and R. R needs him.
Who's going to be on the board, Bridget?
No, Kevin.
You wish.
My good brother Kevin's going to be running the board.
That's your buddy, I know, but
we're going to have a talk with R.
I mean, this has been booked like weeks and weeks ago.
I don't care what you
want. Well, nobody checked with us.
Yeah.
I'm not answering.
Have fun at SEC Media Days.
All right, I think we're done, guys.
Oh, I bet y'all do.
SEC Media News.
Thanks, Phil Deavy.
SEC.
For Bobby, Bruce, Tom, and Glenn, I'm Don.
Good night.
And for our wizard behind the curtain, Five Guys, Stories, and Lives, next week, 6 o'clock. But we will never be.